diplomat remarked to me this morning, it might have been worse if those who are responsible for American defense had listened to isolationists, such as Lindbergh and Wheeler. The consensus of opinion is that in one way the Japs have done a good part. By their action, they have knocked out the isolationists. And in a single day, the United Nations more firmly than any amount of congressional party could have ever possibly accomplished. Observers here see an end to the friction and internal strife, which they believe has until now retarded the defense of the country and severely set back the armaments program. Although the Japanese action came as a surprise to a good part of Europe, it's a practical certainty that other members of the three-party pact, Germany and Italy, knew what was afoot. It's unreasonable to doubt that the dictators in Rome and Berlin didn't know exactly what the Japs had up their kimono sleeves. After all, the object of the three-power pact is cooperation. And one partner certainly isn't going to embark on such a dangerous adventure, such as the Japs have done, unless the other members knew about it, and presumably gave their approval. Some observers suggest that Japan was pressured into immediate action. The first German reaction coming from Berlin followed under two categories, military and political. From a military angle, the Germans say that the swiftness of the attack can only be evaluated by military experts in terms of the fruit it's likely to bear in the future. Lightning attack has always been a favorite tactic of the Germans, so they probably feel that the Japs caught on to how to make successful war. From a political standpoint, the Germans point out that the three-power pact members are bound to go to each other's assistance only in case one of them is attacked. But according to messages from Berlin, the Germans are not inclined to regard Japan as an aggressor. Their viewpoint is the United States was strangling Japan little by little, and that therefore the Americans can be looked upon as aggressors. That, of course, is just unofficial opinion, but it is, nevertheless, the views of important and powerful German political circles. Official comment is, as usual, being reserved until, as the Germans put it, full details can be secured. At any rate, just what the Germans intend to do, if anything, is far from clear. That the Germans are pleased with the turn of events is proven by reports reaching here this morning from the Third Reich. According to confident German sources, the diversion created by Japan in the Pacific is going to be a big help to them in their war on this continent and in Africa. In the first place, they point out that deliveries of war material and planes to England and to the British forces of North Africa will have to be stopped. America will need everything it can produce for its own defense. Secondly, supplies to Russia by way of Vladivostok will be barred by the Japanese fleet. Observers here say that this may be the case for a few months, but express the belief that when American production gets underway on a wartime scale, deliveries to England and Russia will start again. One thing that a good many people over here can't figure out is what the Japs expect to get out of a war with the United States and England. Well, whatever is at the bottom of this, most observers don't think their latest idea is very bright. However, they've started the ball rolling, and no one can really tell where it's going to stop. Now, if the realization that the United States is actually in war with Japan has sunk in, interest here is mainly centered on President Roosevelt's message to Congress, big naval battle reported off Honolulu, and the answer the American and British armed forces are going to give the Japs. The news of the war in the Pacific has driven the Russian and North African war right off the front face. This is Charles Lanius in Bern, Switzerland. I now return you to NBC in New York.
Now, news here in New York, and according to Reuters news agency, Thailand has stopped resistance against Japan, and negotiations are underway. From Berlin, the Germans say Russian troops tried to land on the Crimea Saturday night, but they claim most of the Soviet forces were destroyed. Overseas again, this time to NBC's reporter in London, England.
This is London, John McBain speaking. All Britain is waiting tensely for what Mr. Churchill will have to say in Parliament just about an hour from now. The undoubted declaration of war will be overshadowed by public eagerness for news that Britain and America are striking hard at Japan. Until Mr. Churchill speaks, there'll be no official statements out of London. All morning, reports have been pouring into London from the Far East. At the Admiralty and the War Office, high officials are sending out orders as new messages arrive from the commanders on the spot. Military quarters here today described an attempted Japanese landing at Kota Baru on the east coast of northern Malaya, just south of the frontier with Thailand. They said the attempt was successfully repulsed by shore batteries and troops. The Japanese have evidently been making desperate efforts in the area with the idea of driving down through the peninsula and attacking Singapore by land. Reports of a second and more successful attempt to land at Kota Bharu have reached here. Singapore officially says Japanese forces landed on the beach at Padang Sabak in northeastern Malaya and are engaged by British land and air forces. Singapore also refers to a landing at Kemusin and an infiltration toward Kota Bharu. British planes set one Japanese ship afire and hit another. General Percival, the British commander in Malaya, told the Legislative Council that around Kota Bharu the position is rather confused regarding Japanese troops which are still on land between beaches at the aerodrome, which is in British hands. The Japanese, he stated, are believed to be in possession of southern Thailand. This follows a statement by Sir Senton Thomas, the governor, who told the council that the main enemy landing was at Singora, Thailand, 140 miles north of Kota Bharu. Japanese forces there comprised one cruiser, four destroyers, an armed merchantman, and a transport. Singapore had its first air raid just before dawn. Damage reported was slight. Hong Kong is reported to have been attacked by Japanese land, sea, and air forces after a heavy bombardment from the sea. A large force of Canadians arrived there recently. Dispatches from Singapore report two raids in the southeast corner of Johor, near Singapore, by small formations of planes. The Singapore censor passed a message reporting that mustard gas bombs have been dropped. Observers here feel that this report should be taken with caution. If the Japanese were going to start using gas, it seems likely they'd use it first in larger quantities than the report indicates to gain full value of surprise. In the short walk from my apartment to the office this morning, I asked a South African woman and six English people how they felt about the Japanese entry into the war. The most violent was a woman in a tobacco store. She exploded with the phrase, "Filthy little people, that's the sort of thing they would do." The bank teller said, "What an awful surprise for Hawaii, but I guess the isolationists will have had a basin full now. The Japs must be crazy to think they can get away with it." The South African woman said, "Everyone on my bus was talking about it. You should have heard the excitement. They all think this means the beginning of the end of the war." Those are just random first thoughts by ordinary people. But from talk with ordinary people, from discussion with people whose business it is to be well informed on foreign affairs, and from the thousands of words of comment in the papers, certain things stand out sharply. What is happening in the Pacific is not a war. It is a part of the war. The Axis believes that world conquest is possible. And the responsibility for what the Japanese are doing lies in Berlin just as much as in Tokyo. In the preliminary stages of this war, long about the turn of Munich, some intelligent people here, as at home, realized the plain fact that Britain, America, and every other free nation was directly threatened. There are others who didn't believe it. When the real shooting began, it unified Britain. It split France wide open. I haven't talked with anyone today who isn't sure that Japan's action will unify America as the Nazi attack on France unified Britain. They think Japan's stroke at Hawaii will clear the thinking of those Americans who felt they weren't really at war until United States soil was attacked. This is John McVain in London, returning to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
And that's the latest news of the war. The whole world is waiting today for what is going to happen in Washington. And here is Earl Godwin to tell us the situation at this moment.
Good morning, folks. President Roosevelt will tell Congress and the world today the details of the dirtiest and most murderous stab in the back the world has ever seen when the President starts addressing a joint session of Congress, now scheduled to be 12:30 Eastern Standard Time. After that, Congress will not take long to make the proper declarations concerning the war, which the Axis has started and which most officials here believe to be the end of Japan. But of course, not with a mere sweep of the hand and a mere declaration. The President has already told his cabinet the details of this murderous attack, which was the Emperor of Japan's answer to President Roosevelt's personal note to him, the Emperor, to stop Japanese progress toward war, which will spread to a worldwide conflagration and eventually mean the wiping out of Japan as a so-called world power. The President has told his cabinet and may explain to America today the need for immediate civilian sacrifices, which come about through immediate industrial expansion for still more and even more arms and armament. Congress is prepared to follow through on the President's program implicitly. It won't take them long. That will certainly include increasing even the present large and rapid naval expansion program. It may include even an expansion of the present cargo shipbuilding program, which has got to a point of where it's one a day right now. It will probably call for an end of all the monkey business over strikes in defense industries. Congress is prepared also to take the limitation out of the National Draft Act as to numbers and ages. It may also knock down the bars against selectees serving abroad. It won't take very long for that. Chairman May of the Military Affairs Committee, the gentleman from Kentucky, roll up his sleeves and spit on his hands, he said, and he can change it in an hour. If Congress will only vote that way, and it probably will. The President has already vast powers, tremendous powers, as Commander-in-Chief, and that was given to him by the people in the Constitution. And these powers have been implemented from time to time in these 150 years by emergency statutes which now spring to life and vigor. The White House in Washington becomes the office of the Chief Staff of this total war against aggression, and already your nation's capital has gone military. The thousands of Army and Navy officers on duty here appear in uniform this morning. Soldiers, armed and helmeted, are on duty. The White House is especially well guarded, and in addition to the guards, it is zoned against too close pedestrian or automobile traffic on all of its sides, and to get anywhere near the White House or into the White House, you really have to have business there. The G-men, who have known all along what to do, have begun to pick up yellow suspects, whom they've been following for years. About 1,000 will probably be caught and clamped down. Mexican and Canadian borders have been closed to all aliens, leaving or entering. Securities and Exchange Commission is certainly not going to permit an avalanche of selling, of course. And if a market crisis threatens, the stock exchanges will be closed. And the FCC, that's the Federal Communications Commission, closes down on all amateur radio stations except those to be used in emergency matters. And incidentally, the Washington streetlights were dimmed almost out earlier this morning, of course, as civilian defense officials called for lights out in all but necessary cases. Here in Washington, the Mexican embassy announced early today that the Mexican War Department has ordered a 24-hour patrol of that country's entire Pacific coast. Incidentally, it is understood that some of the Mexican shortwave radio stations have been watched very carefully lately. This nation is now at war, and we will have to work and give and sweat. It behooves every one of us to get behind the President and Congress and present a united front to the world of aggression which now so closely threatens us. Already the fine Americanism immediately glows in Burton Wheeler, who has so bitterly opposed the administration's policy. And that's all from Washington at this time.
And that's the latest news in Europe and in America at this moment. In just a moment, after a pause for station identification, NBC will continue this roundup, bringing you reports from its staff members on duty at Pacific outposts, where this newest war is raging. This is the National Broadcasting Company. WEAF, New York. We take you now to Manila.
Possible exploding bombs. And at 6 p.m. Philippine time, all lights were turned out. Even local radio stations were closed down just before sundown because there is the strong possibility that attacking Japanese bombers might do a local redirection from radio beams in the Philippines. And this broadcast is coming to you from an undisclosed spot. So far as actual war activity is concerned, ripples have happened in the Philippines since approximately 8 hours ago, when a large raid was directed against Fort Stotzenberg and Camp Clark, the largest air base in the Philippines. Communications were cut during that raid, and even yet, we have received no definite report. However, it has been confirmed that there were more than 200 casualties during this particular raid. There are other reports that we have not yet been able to confirm, such as the damaging of the aircraft tender USS Langley and the sinking of the USS Preston near Davao in southern Philippine waters. We have also received a report by way of Radio Tokyo that Wake Island has been attacked and occupied by Japanese troops. We cannot confirm this report. At dawn this morning, Japanese land forces reportedly attacked the British naval base off Hong Kong, which lies only 560 air miles northwest of Manila. The Japanese attacks, both from land and air, were obviously repulsed because at 7:30 this evening, that is 6:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Governor General of Hong Kong broadcast a message of confidence, determination, and good cheer to the people of the British Crown Colony. Tokyo radio stations tonight are predicting that within a few hours, Germany will follow Japan's lead and will declare war on the United States. The Tokyo radio has made this a holy war by telling the people of Japan that this is the Emperor's will, that the United States Navy is one time stronger than the Japanese Navy, that the United States Air Force is far stronger than the Japanese, but that the Japanese people are determined to strive for self-existence and self-protection. Those reports we receive are from Tokyo.
NBC San Francisco, returning you now to New York. WEAF, New York, the station which will bring you the latest news as it occurs from the NBC newsroom in New York and strategic points throughout the world. Well, ladies and gentlemen, here it is Monday morning again, and though it's a little bit late, still we're on time to look in on Studio X and hold our morning rendezvous with Ralph Dumpke and Bud Hewlett. Without further ado, let's see what's happening, shall we, down in Studio X.
You could have gotten that on sooner, Gurney.
Yeah, but I didn't get electricity in time, you see.
It's all right.
And the needles are working a lot better than I stole from Charlie's tree.
Yeah, he's going to complain about that.
Yeah.
And I hung my head and cried.
This will be quick.
You are my sunshine, my only sunshine. You make me happy when skies are gray. You never know, dear, how much I love you.
Yeah, I'm ready, Val.
You are my sunshine, you are my sunshine. You are my sunshine, you are my sunshine. You are my sunshine, you are my sunshine. You are my sunshine, my sunshine today. You are my sunshine, my are my sunshine. You are my sunshine, you are my sunshine. You are my sunshine, you are my sunshine. You are my sunshine today.
What's the name of that?
Something about the shine.
Thank you.
But if you leave me to love another, you'll regret it all someday.
Sunshine.
Yes, we heard the title once or twice, Gurney.
Yes, sir.
Well, Bud, come over. We haven't said good morning.
Well, that's right. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Studio A.
Yeah.
I just happened to think.
What was that?
Well, we haven't given the time for quite some time.
No, but he's here.
Oh, he is, huh? Come in, won't you?
What time?
23 minutes after 8.
What's the temperature?
I don't know, brother. It's kind of chilly out.
Hang on.
Okay. 30 degrees Fahrenheit, in case anyone... I wasn't going to tell him.
Oh, you weren't going to give in at that?
No, I wasn't going to tell him at all.
Well,
what?
Tell me how the toys are coming. Now, Charlie. Charlie.
Yeah?
Did you work all weekend on the toys?
Oh, did we? I'm so tired. Gurney and me are so tired. I don't know how Gurney can pick up a record.
Really?
Yeah, we just worked so hard. But we're happy at our work. Don't misunderstand us.
Well,
we want to do
glad
more.
Of that. Good.
Well, that's fine. Gurney and Charlie, you're both... You both deserve an awful lot of credit.
Yes,
and we might as well tell the folks right now, Bud, about this, in case someone's tuned in for the first time on Studio X. Hope not.
Yeah, I hope not.
Hope they've been listening right along.
Sure.
But you know, the police department and the fire department of New York City is making their annual drive for used toys. You understand the firemen and the policemen are reconditioning these new toys. They're
painting them,
and so on.
Putting wheels on where a wheel is busted.
Mm-hmm. And they're going to distribute these toys over in Madison Square Garden to the poor families of New York City.
That's right.
That's about the 23rd, I think, they distribute these. But, of course, this week, we want to make a special drive, an extra special drive, so that we get all the toys this week, because the firemen and policemen and Charlie and Gurney are going to have an awful time getting all these toys repaired and in good condition by the 23rd.
That's right.
So naturally.
And don't forget to tell them about when they're out shopping to buy an extra toy and send it over to their station house or firehouse.
Yes, that's a good idea. You know, we have some other towns around throughout the country that are doing similar drives
right at
this time of the year.
Let's see, Smithtown Branch.
Yes.
Sauket. West New York, New Rochelle.
Yeah, the fire department, New Rochelle.
That's right.
And here comes a letter from the village of Portchester.
Portchester.
Uh-huh. And they're doing the same thing. They have a recreation center, I believe. Just let me glance at this letter here. Oh, they have a shop at 45 South Main Street. And the hours are from 9 a.m. to 12 noon and 1 to 5 p.m. And also in the evening from 7 to 10. So if you have any toys you'd like to, up in Portchester, that you'd like to give to the fire department, police department there, why, just drop in this door. That's at 45 South Main Street.
Yeah, Mr. Dunkey, read them numbers here in New York that you can call and have the toys picked up.
Well,
you can't take them to your local precinct or fire station.
Yes, I will, Gurney. Incidentally, did you go with any of the boys to pick up some toys?
Oh, yeah. I had more fun over the weekend.
Yeah, me and Gurney, we went out in the fire wagon.
Yeah.
In an emergency
one of
fire
them
wagon.
Open air things.
Yeah, we got a little cold.
Have to hang on, but.
But boy, it was fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, we loaded them up.
And we picked up some pretty fine toys, believe me.
Well, I understand that the police and fire department are extremely anxious to get the larger type of toys now,
like
tricycles
and bicycles and wagons
and so on, yes. Well, in case that you can't get these toys over to your local precinct or firehouse, you may call these numbers and they will be picked up. Not the numbers, the toys.
Yeah, that's true.
Call Canal 6, 6371, 6372, 6373, or 6374. That's Canal 6, 6371.
right.
And if you have any of the toys, well, you just call those numbers, and they'll be glad to pick them up.
Yeah, well, here it is. What time is that up there?
Well, it's just exactly 27 minutes after, and we're due for a nice recording.
All right, if I can get electricity.
You can get electricity. What about the GPC of America?
I don't know. There's
today's their day, you know.
Give me some electricity.
Why, play a record. We'll find out about it.
Pinocchio and Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse had come. The teddy bear had brought Pagliacci and his drum. They sat themselves upon the shelf for the wedding of the wooden soldier and the painted doll. The moment arrived for the wedding to begin. Somebody cried, "Here comes the bride." So the toy music box played the strains of Lohengrin. While all the musical tops joined in, the wooden soldier's regiment was there in grand array, and good old Humpty Dumpty came to give the bride away. Each little toy was filled with joy at the wedding of the wooden soldier and the painted doll.
Why did you play that, Gurney?
Well, Charlie and I repaired the painted doll and the...
And the wooden soldier?
Yeah.
Yeah, we worked on that. This is quite a coincidence, isn't it?
Coincidence what?
Coincidence. I say it's funny how that happened.
Yeah,
that you
certainly
and I worked on
funny.
On a broken doll,
yeah.
And so on.
Yeah.
For, and then we play the record, see? Well, boys, just a moment. Come in, won't you?
What time?
Why, it's 31 minutes after 8 o'clock.
You said it?
Yes, sir, brother.
You know what the temperature is yet?
The temperature is 30 degrees Fahrenheit.
What's up today?
I don't know, but it's kind of low this morning because it's real chilly out.
I am.
You're welcome. Button up your... Did he go?
Yeah, he left.
Have you seen Brad Reynolds lately?
No, I haven't.
He's standing
seen
right
him
here.
Friday
come on
night.
In, Brad.
Oh, how are you?
Say, we want to tell you what a nice job you did on our Friday night... show last night of a Friday night.
Very glad to be with you.
Well, say, well, you know, we've got a lot of letters. You remember that song that you did?
That's right.
When I Leave the World Behind? Well,
right.
That brought a lot of memories. Brought back a lot of memories to a lot of people, and they wrote in. They liked you very much.
Well, thank you so much for letting me be on your show.
All right, sir. You're welcome. Let's do...
No.
I just wanted to give them a preview of what Brad did, a post-tune. Is that what you call it? Well, Bud, I was just thinking, have you got a nice, or gurney, I mean, excuse me.
Yes, sir.
How about a nice record now?
Something Christmassy?
Yeah, well, wait just a second. You know, before you, if you got a Christmas record?
I think so, in my file.
Uh-huh, well, you find one, because I just wanted to say a word. You know, Commissioner Morris, maybe a lot of you folks heard him the other day talk on our program. He's in charge of the Police Athletic League and in charge of this great drive for toys here in New York City. Well, he's sort of like a Santa Claus down there. You know, all the poor boys and girls sort of write to him as your Santa Claus. And he sent me a few of these letters, and I just want to read one.
Oh, all right.
Dear Santa Claus, since Christmas is very, very near, and as you know, we cannot afford to buy toys, we are seven in the family and have no father. We will appreciate very much if you can send us three sisters anything for Christmas. We are 12, 10, and 6. And it's signed, I won't read the name, but isn't that a sweet letter? And that's just what we're going to do. It's signed, I won't read the name, but isn't that a sweet letter? And that's the name, but isn't that a sweet letter? And that's just what we're going to do. We're going to take care of
it. It's 33 and a half.
It is, huh? All right, we'll play that number.
Electricity.
Electricity.
Yes.
It's a 33.